Hello, guys. Welcome to Gold Tournament with Travis Garrison. We got a special guest, my big bro, Dwayne Simpkins, former Terp, former Stag, my brother, Field of 68 Networks. Man, welcome to the show, man. Definitely appreciate having you on.
Oh, thank you for having me, man. It was just high time, man. We got some Terp action going on. So James Gist, Walt, and everything. So high time we got the Terps going, man.
Oh yeah, man. Definitely, man. I definitely been enjoying doing this and talking to guys who I played with or came before me and just hearing the stories. You know, it's funny because before I went to DeMatha, I didn't really follow college basketball. So I wasn't hip to anything, man. So when I went to DeMatha, it was like a crash course of who's who in regards to college basketball, the coaches, because, the coaches are coming to the gym, the open gym. So that's the way, and the guys should point out the coaches to me. And kind of like I said, it was a crash course, man. So to hear the stories and when you guys were playing in your days, man, just to hear the legacy and to hear how things were going, man, it's great. I'm enjoying it.
Awesome, man. Doing a hell of a job.
I appreciate that, man. I'm trying, man. I know you're coaching at George Mason right now, but do you have a chance to like catch out any of the Terps games?
Yeah, I try to. Obviously, it's a lot easier now with the fact that we're not out recruiting and everything. But even still, man, I try to make it a point to DVR the games and watch them and everything, because no matter where I am, man, I bleed Terp red, gold, and white, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I'll always watch those guys, always rooting for them, man. And, I'll drop Coach Turgeon a text every now and then about a good win and that type of thing. So, I always want to see those guys do well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I had talked to a few guys, man, and, they were doing really well last year. I had a chance to possibly win it, and then COVID happened. I was just like, man, just imagine when I was a player, man, just if something like that was to happen, especially like if you was like a senior, like the Sticks or the Conway, like when they about to be out and they had a chance to win it and then you that close and then they take the season away from you. So it's I know, health is more important, but just like all the hard work and the push through and the grind and everything that goes into preparing for the game and just going out there and giving you all and then have something like that happen, man. I was just like, man, that's
a tough one. It's tough, man. I mean, we were in Brooklyn. We had just won our first round game of the A-10 tournament, and our game was at like whatever 2:30, and the game before us was UMass against I can't remember who else, maybe St. Bonaventure. And I'm in my room, ironing my shirt, and I see Matt McCall, who's the head coach at UMass. I see him. The game's tipping off, and I see him on the phone walking around at half court, and I'm like, oh, this is not good, And then to see the look on our guys' faces, man, when we told them that we're done for the year and for our league specifically, man, I really felt bad for Anthony Grant and those guys at Dayton, man, because I think they had a legitimate shot of winning a national championship, So, again, man, everybody is, like you said, the most important thing is the mental and physical well-being of our student-athletes and staffs and everything. I just hope that we can get back to quote unquote normal, the new normal sooner than later.
Right. Absolutely, man. And me too, man, just watching the games and seeing how things are being played, and even this season now with the Terps, man, they had a number of good wins against top ranked teams, who I think was going to help them toward down the line, especially with the momentum going right into tournament time. I think that'll be huge for them. I know they just took an L a couple of nights ago, but things could change. They got a number of games left. They can, pick things back up and get things going. You know how it is, man. When you're an athlete or when you're on a team and, just all you need is a couple of good wins and you get that That's momentum it. Back going.
That's it. And especially now, man, people fail to realize that the average fan, they look at these kids as robots, man. And like these kids, there's a lot of anxiety going on from day to day within the student athletes, man, on these college campuses. I was just telling my wife the other night, I was telling her about the situation that happened at Carolina. The kids are celebrating in their dorms of a big time win against Duke. I told her, I said, hey, I remember we beat Duke at the buzzer. We catch a charter flight back. We head straight to the club. We was partying. We was having a damn good time. Like, that's what college basketball is supposed to be like,
Right.
Now you get a big time win. You go back to your dorm and you're like, all right, stay in your rooms. Like, that's not normal. That's not normal, right, man. That's why I think that's why you see such a fluctuation in the performances of teams, and more specifically the individual players, man, because it's tough, man. This is really tough.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, you see a lot of teams that's usually ranked high that's not even ranked anymore, or not ranked as high, because we're talking about the fans being there and how big of a part the fans played. And now your fans is the bench. Your bench whoever has the loudest bench is the home team.
Right, right. And not to mention, you know, a program like Kentucky, right? Everybody, bunch of people crushing Calipari and everything. People fail to realize how important that 6 to 8 weeks in the summertime is for an incoming freshman to get his feet wet, obviously off the court, and then on the court, strength and conditioning, taking a class or two just to get your feet wet, getting that an idea of how to play with your teammates, and then how to play college basketball. You know, anybody could tell you, man, like, I was a McDonald's All-American coming out of high school. Nothing could prepare you for, you know, in this case, the ACC, until you got out there and you got numerous reps of practice and playing and practice and playing. Like, these kids are 17, 18 years old. They're going up against grown men. They played against Richmond in our league. Richmond got them good. You know, they got five guys that are 22 years old. You know, I don't care how talented you are. You coming from high school, you playing against grown men in college. Right. That takes some time. That takes some time. I think you're starting to see that with some of the blue bloods that have really young talent, you know, the Dukes and the Kentuckys of the world. You know, it's college basketball. You got grown men going up against high school kids, kids that are just transitioning from high school. It's a big deal.
Right. Right. Absolutely, man. And like you said, man, just like I said, me watching the games and seeing how things are now with no fans, and, you know, you actually can hear that everything that's going on. And like you said, just the change, man, you talking about some guys that were probably sophomore, juniors, and seniors that had the fans around. Then you go from having that to now it's like you're playing open gym. It's open gym.
Yeah. Open gym with scouting reports. Your coach still wants you to make sure you're closing out on the shooter properly and the non-shooter properly. So, yeah, it's pretty much like pickup, but it's with a little bit more structure.
Right, right. Absolutely, man. I know for sure I want to talk to you a little bit about this, and I'm pretty sure a lot of fans want to know too. But, like, you know, what made you choose Maryland? I know you had a lot of options, man. I know you had a lot of options, the schools to choose from. What made you choose the Terps?
Growing up, you know, in the 80s and everything, man, I'll be honest with you, like, Georgetown basketball was it. You know, I wanted to be a Georgetown Hoya. I wanted to run and jump and press and be a part of Hoya paranoia and everything. That's what I grew up with. And then I had a slow transition, and Johnny Dawkins being from the D.C. area and Tommy Amaker, you know, those Duke teams, man, I had the wristband like Johnny Dawkins did. I wore the number 24. You know, I couldn't jump like him, but I tried to play like him. I was like, man, I want to go to Duke now.
Right.
And then fast forward, I Saturday mornings, man, back in the day, anybody my age can tell you, Raycom Sports, you know, you watching ACC basketball, man, you play, you know, you see UVA, you see Carolina, you see Duke, you see NC State, Chris Cortiani, and all of those guys. And then this Lynn Bias guy, who's from PG County like I am, he's on the scene and you're just watching him. You're like, man, like, this dude he's awesome. And I remember it like it was yesterday, man. After his junior year, the year that he got drafted, I met him face-to-face for the first time. It was at the Capitol Classic, that, you know, the long-running big-time all-star game that was going on here in the D.C. area. And he was sitting courtside. And me and some of my boys club teammates, our team, went to the game, and we went up to him, man, and like dapped him up and talked a little bit. And he talked about, you know, hey, make sure you guys take care of your work in the classroom and keep working on your game and everything. And then you fast forward two months later, like, he's passed away. Yeah. And if you're from this area, man, you know as well as I know, every single person can tell you where they were when Lenny Bias, when they found word that Lenny Bias had passed. You know, when I watched the 30 for 30 video, man, I mean, I got chills. I got, you know, tears, because that really hit home, man. But from that period, I was like, man, I want to be a Maryland Terp. And then the last one, Walt Williams. You know, when I was in high school, Walt Williams just cut my hair when I was a senior in high school. I would drive down to Route 1 because I didn't have a full schedule. And, you know, DeMath is literally less than 10 minutes away from Maryland. Right. So I would get out, man, around 12 o'clock. I would drive down, go up in the dorms, and Walt would either cut my hair or we would all sit in the dorms and watch The Young and the Restless. We sit down and watch the stories.
Oh,
as a team, I'm a high school kid, but I'm indoctrinated into the program. I'm sitting around and, you know, we're talking about the stories and everything, man. But like to see what Walt Williams did, to have an opportunity to transfer and not have to sit out, and for him to say, "I made a commitment to Maryland and this is where I want to be," that really resonated with me, man. And so I give a lot of props to Walt, man, because I was like, I want to do what this dude did.
Now, absolutely, man. I hear a lot of guys talk about that, either, you know, talk about the Lynn bias or Walt. Like you said, man, Walt, like I spoke to Coach Williams and just talked about how the importance of him deciding to stay. You know, he could have left. He's more like a 6'8 guard, man. So he could have left, but he decided, like you said, man, that commitment, staying home, being loyal. So like you said, man, that's huge, man. I hear that all the time. Every time you talk about Maryland basketball, talk about Lynn Bias, talk about the importance of Walt staying.
Yeah, for me, man, Walt Williams, that was it. I want to do what Walt did for the DC area.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And man, so being a McDonald's All-American, coming from DeMatha, what was it like you said, that transition? Now you're going from the high school game. Obviously, you know, DeMatha, we play a lot of tough teams, so we have that experience, but you're talking about now you're going into the ACC. Now it's a little different. Like you said, it's grown men. It's a little different now. So what was that experience like the transition?
It was tough. I didn't realize how tough it was going to be until we started practice. Because like in the preseason, we're playing pickup ball. You know, it was much different then. We couldn't enroll in the summertime and take classes then. You had to wait until the fall. So I'm playing pickup ball, and you know, the starting point guard at the time was Kevin McClinton, who was a really, really solid point guard, man, the ACC, but 6'4", 205. You know, I'm 6 foot, 158, 160 maybe as a freshman. And I remember playing pickup, you know, there's some structure, but not. I'm quicker than him, faster than him, and getting to spots and everything. And then once we start practice, and it's like, hey, you got to run this particular play. And in this play, you've got to get the ball to this spot at this particular time. And so now, yeah, you could use your speed and everything, but now that forearm gets you and you don't get to that spot as quick. I wasn't as used to the speed of the game. You know, I was a decent three-point shooter, pretty good three-point shooter when I was coming out of high school. And because of the speed of the game, because of the length that you're going against, you know, I'm no longer shooting 38 to 40%. You know, my freshman year, I think I shot 27% from three. You know, it took quite a while for me personally to, one, get used to the speed and the length. You know, like, it wasn't like I was transitioning playing in the Patriot League. You know, no disrespect to Patriot League or anything, but it was playing the ACC. You know, Randolph Childress, Chris Whitney at the time, Jeff McGinnis. Like, I was going against pros every single night. And then on top of that, I'm playing for Gary Williams. Gary is tough on point guards, tougher than anybody else, you know? Yes. So that was a big change for me, man. Like, you know, Coach Wooten, who I'd never heard curse before, you know, very sarcastic, you know, could stab you with his sarcasm. But Gary, complete 180. Like, I thought my name was motherfucker for quite a while. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm like, you know, first game, I'm like, whoa, hey, man. Dwayne, you know, I didn't recruit me. You didn't say all that stuff. So that took a while, man. That took quite a while for me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, I was going to ask you, man, what was it like, you know, playing for a younger Coach Williams, you know, when, I knew when I played for him, he was fiery, you know, and everything. But, like, how was playing for a younger Coach Williams, and imagine Coach Williams coaching during COVID? Like, basically, there's no fans.
Come on, bro. That's not even fair.
Hey, bro.
There wouldn't be no kids left in the program, man. Gary be like, what the hell? Mental wellness? What the hell are you talking about? Bro. Get out here and be ready to play at 3:30. Exactly, that'd be tough, man. But, yeah, playing for Gary, man, was it was a huge blessing. And I didn't realize the blessing until much later in my career, because there was always a sense of urgency, man, in everything that we did, you know, whether it be shoot around, obviously practice, sideline out of bounds, baseline out of bounds. It was like, nah, we need this done like yesterday. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of that came from the fact that, you know, a lot of people fail to remember Coach Williams took this job from Ohio State. He had Ohio State rolling. I think he had the number one recruiting class in the country when he came here to Maryland. And he came under the pretense that, hey, Maryland was going to be facing some kind of NCAA sanctions, but he was pretty much told that they're not going to be that severe. Well, months later, after he gets the job, they're like, oh, you guys got like a year or two postseason ban, no live TV, reduction in scholarships. So my freshman year was the very first year that we were completely off of probation and all the limitations that the NCAA had placed on the University of Maryland men's basketball team. And I always got a sense that Gary was like, man, he was like a fighter in a corner, and he felt like, I've got to go earn some respect, you know? Right. And that's the reason why, man, I felt so good. You know, when I go back and look at video and everything, like us winning that game, my sophomore year, we beat Georgetown in at their home court. They were nationally ranked. We were picked 12th in the ACC or whatever it was, and we went in overtime. And to see him jumping around and everything, man, I think that's where you saw all of that stuff come out, because he had been, you know, Maryland had been pushed down for such a long time, ever since the death of Lynn Bias. And I think that for him, it was like, hey, we got some footing. We got a foundation to build this thing off of. And, you know, that's something I'm really proud about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to touch on that, too, because I know when I was there, obviously they're not playing Georgetown no more. But, you know, when I was there, we didn't play Georgetown, but everybody wanted to see that Maryland Georgetown games again.
Well, y'all didn't play because we beat them, and it was like, nah, we're not returning the basketball game. That sucked. They didn't play for years later, but I digress. I won't get into that.
Hey, bro, what was that like, man? Like, you know, it's just like you got the North Carolina, the Duke rivalry, because they're in the same area. They're not that far from each other. But, like, what was that like, that Maryland Georgetown, especially back then? When DC was DC, like it was different. You know, that, like you said, man, Georgetown had what it had going on. Then, like you said, man, I know y'all beat them when they was highly ranked. But what was that rivalry like? And then you have to see those guys out, and y'all go out in the streets. And like, what was that?
We went to the same clubs and everything. Yeah, you know what I mean? A couple of them try to hit on their girls, the whole deal.
Right.
You know, but it was interesting because, like, there wasn't a quote unquote rivalry because they hadn't played since, you know, Lefty was there. And it was some time ago. And obviously John Thompson, man, all the work that he did to build that program, Georgetown, to what it was. So when we got the game, you know, it was a pretty big deal, especially from the Maryland fans, you know, and we go into their arena and I walk out and probably three quarters of the arena is like, they're rocking red. It was like a home game on their court. And then the fact that, you know how it is, man, here in the D.C. area, you know, the guys who are from the D.C. area, we got a lot of pride. Four of our top players were from the D.C. area at the time. Myself, X-Ray Hip, Johnny Rhodes, and obviously Joe Smith was down the road in Norfolk. You know, we had a lot of pride, man. And here in the summertime, you know how it is. You play in the Kenner League up at Georgetown and McDonough Arena. You know, you can't have your whole team playing on one team. Right. So we had a couple Maryland guys here, going against a couple Georgetown guys there. So there was always some of that, you know, outside of playing in games and everything. There was always some competition there. So to get that win, yeah, that was pretty big.
Yeah, man. Like I said, man, a lot of this stuff, you know, I'm just even learning about, or just, you know, I hear stories about. So when I get a chance to, you know, talk to guys that actually experienced it, it's always, you know, you think this stuff is for the fans a lot of times. A lot of times, I appreciate it more than anything. You know what I mean? Just being a former player and then to hear these stories from these guys before my time, with the history of it. And I know you touched on it, man. Y'all had a mob, bro. And y'all had a mob. Hey, bro, man, you know, like you said, X-Reed, you know, Johnny, you know, with Joe Smith, what was that like, man? Playing like those group of guys, man. Like, I know you played with them, so it's a little different when you in the midst of it, but from the outside looking in, you're like, man, they had a mob, man. So what was that like? What was the practices like? What was that experience like, you know?
Yeah, so I'll go back, man. So obviously myself and Keith Booth, we Keith and I played with each other AAU basketball with a team called DC Players. Those who know AAU basketball in this area, man, Donnie Gross, who ran that program. I mean, we had some tough players. I mean, we had myself, Stacy Robinson, who was supposed to go to Maryland before he went to JUCO. Von Jones, who ended up at GW, DeMatha guy, Hall of Fame DeMatha guy. Mm-hmm. Keith Booth, like I said, Mike Lloyd, who ended up going to Syracuse, who was a McDonald's All-American. Dante Bright, who went to UMass and was a part of that UMass Elite Eight team. He was a McDonald's All-American. But Keith was 1 year behind me. So we had played with each other. Myself and Johnny, we competed against each other. I didn't know Johnny that well. Like, we hated each other. You know, he went to Dunbar, I went to DeMatha. We beat them in the city title game. They beat us. So we knew of each other. X-Ree and I, we all grew up. X-Ree, Johnny and I all grew up in Southeast, close to each other. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even know each other for quite some time. So fast forward, when it comes time for me to want to go to Maryland, I reach out to Keith. I reach out to Stacy Robinson, like, yo, let's do this thing, man. Like, bet, let's do it. So those guys all commit. Well, obviously, Keith being behind us, I found out that Keith had finally committed. My freshman year, we lose to Carolina in the ACC tournament in Charlotte. And, like, we lost. The season's over with. And all I hear is Billy Hahn, our assistant coach, jumping up and down. We got him. We got him. And I'm thinking to myself, man, we just lost a damn game.
Right, excited
about. So Keith had committed. So fast forward, we, you know, obviously this kid, Joe Smith, I remember him coming on his visit and we were shooting around. I could see he had nice touch and everything, but I didn't know anything about Joe Smith. Right. Fast forward, he commits, comes on campus, and we're going into my sophomore year. My freshman year, we're terrible. You know, we finished probably last in the ACC, getting our heads handed to us every single night. So Joe Smith is, we knew he was good, but it wasn't really apparent until a Sunday night. It was our very first time on campus as a team. He and Keith are freshmen. We had a guy named Nemanja Petrovic. Nemanja came in when I came in, and Nemanja was the incumbent. He was going to be the starting center. You know, he played the year before, could shoot it, European kid, could really shoot it, 6'9", tough. And Travis, if I tell you the clinic that Joe Smith put on Nemanja Petrovic that Sunday night, I mean, it was like taking candy from a baby. Now everybody's just like, whoa, this dude pretty good. So fast forward, the next day, it's like 3:30, 4 o'clock. I walk up in my suite and a couple of my teammates like, yo, you hear about Nemanja? And I'm like, nah, what's going on? He all right? Man, transferring. The very next day, Nemanja was like, he probably said, I'm not playing here because this dude is damn good. I mean, that was the kind of beatdown that Joe Smith put on this dude in a pickup game to make him say, I can't stay here because I ain't going to play in front of this guy.
Wow. That's
yeah,
crazy,
but through that preseason, man, you could just see it like, oh, no, this dude ain't good. He's special. And it was incumbent upon us as his players, man, to realize, like, yeah, we all bring certain things to the table. But at the end of the clock, when we got to get a bucket, hey, Joe, get on that block. We're going to throw the ball into you. We're going to play off of you. You know what I mean? So it wasn't rocket science. It wasn't rocket science at all, man. But to see those guys, and the thing about it, man, we were all competitive. We all brought different things to the table. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most united type teams, man, that I've ever been a part of.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy, man. Like you said, like I said, stuff that I don't know, man. I'm pretty sure a lot of fans don't know. They love to hear stories like that. Hey, man, it got him so good, he made a transfer, bro.
Bruh. I knew it was bad, but I was like, it ain't that bad, bro. Like, come on, bitch, back him up a little bit.
Right. That good, man. He put in work, man, and then was gone after that year. Man, that's another player I want to ask you about is because Coach used to always bring him up when I was playing there, man, X-Ree Hill. Like, I know, like, so how was he? You know, I know he was like my height, 6'7", 6'8". 6'9". So what was like his game?
He was Johnny. I'm sorry. X may be one of the most gifted, God gifted, talented players that I've ever played against. Long, he could sit down in a stance, man, and take up so much space. He could really guard. And if you had the ball in a break as a point guard and he was running the wing, man, all you had to do was just time up when you wanted to give it to him and where you wanted to give it to him, whether it be a drop off or just throw it to the rim. He'd go get it. And then he could shoot the ball from three really well. I always tell people, if in today's game, if the type of season that he had after his sophomore year, the year that we went to the Sweet 16 for the first time in like 10 years, you know, X very well could have declared for the draft and been a fringe first round pick, I think. You know, he was that good, really talented man. X loved to party. You know that.
That's why coach used to bring him up to me. Hey, bro. Hey, I lied to you now. Hey, coach used to bring him up to me all the time when I was in practice. Like, man, you know, he'd bring X name up. He'd be like, man, X Reed was really good player, man, but just love the party. You love the party. And that's how it was. And he used to bring that up to me every time in practice. It was me. He was always comparing me to X Reed him every time in practice, bro. Every time in practice, man.
X, great dude, man. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't mind us talking about it now, man. But like, yo, we might have lifting at 6:30. Man, I'm coming out. Everybody walking to the car, ready to walk across campus. X just pulling up. Hey, man, I go inside, man, grab me some Cheetos, man. I'm going to meet y'all at the locker. Meet you at the weight room. Hey, but what was wild was he would do his work and show up to practice and be full go. He just did it. That was his thing. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I definitely know. I heard he was a really good player, man. And, you know, especially like I said, y'all had a mob, man. You know, then y'all had Keith Booth, all you guys together, man. Like what was some of the greatest moments you had during your time at Maryland and experience or some stuff like a story that nobody may not know about besides the one when Joe Smith made his teammate quit besides that?
Oh man, it had quite a few, man. You know what? At the end of the day, man, just that feeling of being the quote unquote underdog. You know, that was kind of the reason why I went to Maryland. I mean, I had a chance, you know, my final schools, man, were Duke, Wake Forest, Providence at the time with Rick Barnes. Leonard Hamilton was at Miami. He was just getting things going. And I was like, I felt if I went to Duke, it was going to be like going into DeMath to some degree in terms of like they always win. And I was like, man, I want to be like a groundbreaker to some degree. You know what I mean? I got lucky in being able to play with some of the really talented players that I was able to play with. But to be able to go on the road and beat Duke at the buzzer when we hadn't done it in years, to be able to go into the Dean Dome and win a game we hadn't done it in years, to be able to tie for the ACC regular season championship my junior year when we hadn't done it in years, you know, going to those locker rooms, man, and just having that feeling, there's nothing like it, nothing like it. And then another big time moment for me, our sophomore year, which was Joe and Keith's freshman year, you know, again, we were picked 12th or whatever. We start the season, we win against Georgetown. We start the season, ACC season, on the road against Georgia Tech. They were nationally ranked. We went and beat them good. And we exceeded expectations, but even still at the end of the season, we had to win a game or so to like really get in. And I remember we had UVA and they were talented, man, tough, you know, Corey Alexander at the point guard position, Yuri Bonds, Jason Williford, Junior Burroughs, like tough physical team. And we ended up beating them the last regular season game. We were like, we were hoping and praying like, man, we hope that's enough. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting in our locker room doing Selection Sunday, and one screen goes past, and another screen. Travis, we don't see our name pop up until the very last screen. And like, dude, the feeling that we had, I've never cried because like I was happy. I used to see that, like, man, that's the dumbest thing. How can you be happy and cry? Right. But dude, I was just so overcome with emotion, man. It was like we all in hugging each other and just like, dude, that feeling right there was just surreal, surreal.
I can imagine, like you said, man, a lot of people probably who don't play sports don't understand what it all takes into getting to that point. You know, I know the feeling like in 2004, we won the ACC championship that year. Like, we was on a bubble going in. So we had to grind it out. We was sophomore. We were young. So we were all young, man. And we had to grind it out. And then we ended up winning it all. And then, of course, by us winning the ACC championship, we automatically get that bid to get in. But just that grind and just had to deal with that the outside world depicting us. So we had to literally just focus on the locker room, you know, the locker room. No, and a lot inside, of people don't, yep. Exactly. A lot of people don't understand what goes on in that grind and what we had to deal with outside of basketball and everything that goes. It's like it's so much junk that's in there that we had to simplify it, you know, for we can be successful. You know, and a lot of people don't understand it. They may not play the game. They don't understand it, you know.
I'm just glad we didn't have social media at the time, man, and getting on Twitter and having people bash you and your team and everything. We can kind of just isolate ourselves from that stuff. We had the Washington Post. You know, if you could watch, you could open that up or listen to sports talk radio, but we were kind of insulated relative to the kids now, for sure.
Man, hey, look here, man. Hey, it was by God's grace. Hey, it was by God's grace, bro, that we didn't have social media.
Social media, these camera phones. Yeah,
bro. Hey, God.
That would have been good. That would not have been good. That would not have been good. Dude, my age and my generation, we talk about that all the time. Man, how many times would you have been on the ticker? Oh, how many times would you have been on ESPN on the crawl at the bottom? Oh,
Bro.
No doubt.
No doubt. We just had my friend, I think, during my time there, we had Facebook come on, and you need to know, you needed your UMD ID to get on, and I didn't even know my UMD ID, so I can't get on anyway. And I was like, man, forget it, I'm good. Hey, but bro, by the grace of God, man, that we didn't have any social media, man, it'd have been ugly. Like you said, man. That ticker would have been going around 24/7, bro. Hey, but all right, so you finished up at Maryland, man. Now you're starting your pro career. Like, what was that process like? Like you said, man, it's different chapters as us athletes, man. We got the high school, college, and then us fortunate enough, we go on to play on that professional level. So what was your process like? What was that transition like? What was that process like for you?
So when I came out, I went down to Portsmouth, for the pre-draft stuff and everything, played really well my first game. I remember my agent called me, hey, man, like, talk about possibly, like, you know, late first round. I'm like, oh, man, you know, I had a real good game, won the game. And then the next two games, I played okay, and our teams lost. And that year, Derek Fisher was there. Mucci Norris was there, you know, DMV dude. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't progress to Chicago. And I really felt in my heart, man, I'm like, I didn't really think that I was ready from a physical standpoint to be able to play at that level, because I played against pros and everything. I was like, to be consistent, man, and like really make my mark, I didn't really feel I was ready. So I went overseas. My first year I played in Belgium, had a pretty good season. And then the following year I was able to get a contract and play in France. And in that year, that spring, my daughter was born, my very first child. And I was like, man, like I want to spend some time with her. I honestly felt like at the time I was really frustrated because I wanted to make the NBA and everything, went to some CBA trials. That was actually the year that they had the lockout in 98. And, you know, I just felt like, man, I might be done. And so I did that, stopped playing for a while. And I started just doing a ton of training, small group training. I was doing summer camps and everything. That was kind of like my outlet. Had a little side business, little beeper and cell phone business going on at the time. Yeah. And then I started getting into coaching. I went and coached with Joe Wooten at Bishop O'Connell. First, I was at DeMatha as a JV coach for a year. And then I went with Joe Wooten over at Bishop O'Connell for a year. And that's when I got that itch, man. I'm like, I'm not done playing yet. And I was fortunate enough, man, to play. Went to the now defunct USBL. Lionel Hollins was my coach, who's NBA coach and everything. Man, I learned so much from this dude from an X's and O's standpoint and just a roster management standpoint, man, a tremendous blessing. And then I was fortunate enough, man, to play well enough, and I got, you know, my best contract that I had gotten up until that point in playing in Milan, Italy. And I did that for a year. And then my son was born the following year while I was in China. And I told the people in China, I said, hey, my son's going to be born in December. Before I come over there, you guys fine with it? Yeah, we're fine. I get over there, I'm hooping, I'm playing well. December comes. Hey, I got to get on this bird, man. I got to get back. I got to see the birth of my son. Oh, they hemming and hawing. Oh, talk about that, you know, withholding my money and everything. I was like, you know what? I just took that as God's sign. It's like, you're done with this hooping thing. So I said, you know what? Whatever you want to pay me, but just know I'm getting on this plane tomorrow. That was my last year playing professionally, man. And then that's when I really just started, focusing in on my college coaching career, honestly. I was a high school coach for 2 years at Sitwell Friends School. And then after that, I was a high school coach, head coach at St. Albans School for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was frustrated because I was like, man, I want to coach in college. I feel like I'm spinning my wheels in high school, but it's interesting, man. Like, I'm a big believer in God, and he's got things mapped out for you for a reason. And I look back on it now. I got a chance to run my own program. I fundraised. I did a number of things that will make me a better. It's made me a better college coach as an assistant, and it will bode well for me if and when the time does come. I'm blessed enough to have a head coaching position in college as well. So that's kind of like where I got to, man. I'm in my sixth year now at George Mason. Loving it, working for a great coach and Coach Dave Paulson, a great person first and foremost. And that's where we are now.
Man, that's great, man. I know, you know, obviously I've been keeping up and following you, you know, because you big bro. And then I know a lot of people, the Terps, you know, either other people as well that want to know what's going on with you. I remember, man, you got to remember this. You probably don't remember this little part I'm going to tell you, but I know you remember us, you was coaching us over in Sweden when we went over my junior year when I was at DeMatha. You was our coach. You was our coach.
Corey McCray was on that team. Yep.
Great. It was a great experience, man. But I tell guys this all the time, and as an athlete, man, it's I mean, I go through it now with some of the guys I mentor, but it's pieces that we pick apart that stay with us to this day. It stayed with throughout my whole career. I remember a conversation we had at a bus stop. We was waiting for the bus, and we was. Because I think we just got finished practicing or something, but we were sitting at the bus stop and I was asking you about, you know, the pro career and things that we just talked about basketball and just the whole process of it all. And I remember sitting there, man, you kind of broke it down to me from, you know, what I needed to do to get to where I wanted to go. And then you talked about the professional level and then, you know, college basketball as well. I don't know if you remember that conversation, do you?
I don't remember that one specifically. I remember it was one night we stayed up like all night, man. We were just talking about any and everything. Any and everything, and that we would talk about potentially Maryland and the recruitment process and everything. But that's interesting that stuck with you because I don't remember that one.
Man, I tell you all the time, and I told Walt too, man, that you guys, man, because you big bro, and then you, like I said, DeMatha, so I used to see you all the time, and you hear stories all the time. And Coach Wu used to rave about you all the time, and then when I have a chance to talk to you guys, and you guys give us advice, you know, whether we follow it or not. I mean, I always remember those things and I always appreciate that stuff, man. So I know for me, man, you know, I definitely appreciate you. Every time I see you, man, it's always love, you know, because of the advice you gave me, the support you gave me through, you know, my DeMatha career, Merlin, and even to this day, stuff I got going on, stuff I'm trying to do. Man, I appreciate you. I'm pretty sure a lot of these, your former players, guys you trained and mentored, and even the guys there now at George Mason, man, because man, you killing it. And I already know it's only a matter of time till you get that head coaching job.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I think that's for me, man, that's why this is so rewarding to hear stories like that. It's cool, obviously. I'm competitive. I want to win games and everything. I'm coming from winning programs. But at the end of the day, to be able to have, you know, an invitation from a former student athlete of mine from St. Albans saying he's getting married. He wants me to come to the wedding. Or a simple text from a kid like, hey, coach, man, I appreciate, you know, the words of wisdom you gave me in, you know, the spring of 2009 or whatever. And then perfect case in point, the things that you just pointed out like that. That's why I do this. You know, the wins and losses, man, that stuff's going to take care of itself. I know that. Been there, done that. But trying to do right by people, man, is starting to just steadily plant seeds into those student athletes that I work with. And, you know, quite honestly, the majority of them that I coach and work with, they're African-Americans, you know, right. And there's some things that I've experienced both at the student athlete level, at the professional level, as a dad, as a husband. These are things, man, that like, this is my testimony. I'm sharing these things with you. It's my dad always used to tell me, I'm telling you tomorrow's news today. Mm. There's no different. There's no difference. Yeah, 96 to 2006 to 2021. Yeah, the technology changes and everything else. But at the end of the day, a lot of stuff's still the same. You know what I mean? Absolutely. You got to do right by people. You got to try to put your best foot forward. You got to be able to fight through adversity. All of those things, man, those things never change.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Like I said, man, I definitely appreciate you joining the Go Terps with Travis Garrison on the Field of 68 Networks. My big bro, Dwayne Simpkins, man, it's an honor. And I appreciate you taking time with your busy schedule because I know you got to get on into that floor. I just want to wish you the best of luck, man, through the rest of the season this year. My young boy, AJ Wilson, killing it. That's my guy. Tell him I said what's up. But yeah, man, I definitely appreciate you coming on. And yeah, man, so I appreciate you, big bro. Really, man, thanks.
Thank you, bro. Much love to you, man. Appreciate you.
All right, man. Tell the family I say hello, too.
Will do. Will do.
All right, bro.